for Stanford for a family of two, I didn't qualify for affordable housing due to my salary. It's become very expensive because of people moving in and new businesses. I kind of felt like I was pushed out. I was in a funny place where it's like, what do I do? They told me I don't qualify for a family of two. I wasn't going to get another child to have a family of three. So therefore, I'm like, okay, I have to make a decision. Do I want to continue to pay X amount of rent, or do I want to become a homeowner?
You're hearing just a snippet of a new testimony. Sometimes we hear about the lack of affordable housing, the lack of workforce housing specifically, and sometimes we don't even know what that average person looks like who is looking for housing. Sometimes we have a misconception, if you will, in our minds. This is somebody who lives in Stamford, Connecticut, a single mother, two children. She is a teacher. She is somebody who is helping to grow the next generation of children into adults in the school system in Stamford. And yet she could not find secure housing. And thanks to Connecticut Housing Partners, not only for telling this story, but for helping Erica, who you were just hearing before. I think it's so important that we use this opportunity when we talk to Renee Dobis, who's the CEO of CHP, to highlight stories like this. And Renee, welcome back. How many Ericas are there out there? Would you say this is sort of the average story in Connecticut? The person that cannot find secure housing, these are people who are not only working full-time jobs, raising families, but these are backbone of society type jobs. She's a teacher. I mean, we see this, right, with firefighters, police officers, people who are working in our local businesses. I mean, would you say that's sort of the average Connecticut resident we're dealing with here?
So, yes. Yeah, so I'm going to throw out a new acronym to your audience, and it's called ALICE. And that means asset limited, income constrained, and employed. And a third of the residents in the state of Connecticut fall into that category. And that means they're above the poverty line, but they don't make enough income to survive. And the survivable budget in Connecticut for a family of three is $113,000.
That's wild.
The average, it is wild. And we know the average income in the state of Connecticut is around $65,000. So to circle back to Erica, who is in Stamford and she's a school teacher, the average salary, the lowest salary in Stamford is $58,000 for a teacher and the highest is $87,000. Even at 87, which I think is a good income, they could only afford $2,000 of their salary a month to go towards rent. Mm. The average cost of rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Stamford is $3,000.
Correct.
Which means you have to earn $120,000 to be able to live there. So, yes, and there are population who are falling into the ALICE category is growing. It grew by 11% in 2 years. So it, so housing that affordable is critical to our economic survival in the state of Connecticut.
So we have these monthly conversations with Renee Dobis because she's not only our housing expert, but this is an ongoing issue, certainly nationwide. But when we focus on Connecticut specifically, we can't find, it feels like, solutions fast enough. And we know there are talks going on in Hartford yet again during this legislative session to try and find some of those solutions. And Renee, I wanted to get your perspective. I know you are constantly in talks with Connecticut officials, even officials at the national level, to try and help this issue. What are you hearing at this point to try and actually create viable solutions and certainly faster than maybe the timelines we're even seeing initially from the governor, which is, you know, oh, in the next 10 years we'll have, no, we need it now. We need it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're short 110,000 units right now. Department of Housing has about 17,000 units in their pipeline. The legislators, they're looking at a couple different options, which is known as fair share. And then, following the transit, I can't remember the name of the policy, something like work and ride or something like that.
Yes.
So they're looking at those two different things. They recently had testimonies from various organizations to talk about what their thoughts are. So I'm not sure at this point in time where their heads are at. Nationwide, we have a shortage of 3.9 million units. And I have not seen any significant cuts to HUD. If anything, they're trying to build reduce regulations so housing can be built more quickly. And so affirmatively furthering fair housing has been eliminated by HUD, which is, you know, basically it's a report and a study that developers have to do to make sure that there's a demand for housing. And it's silly because we all know it's there's a demand for housing.
Right.
So there is a lot.
We know this.
Yes. Yeah, so there is a lot going on. And I've been talking to private developers, you know, who develop market rate products because they need to get in the game, right? They need to start helping build affordable housing, even if they build it and then a company like mine buys it from them. Because trying to deal with Connecticut Housing Finance Authority and Department of Housing is very, it's very tricky, and there's a lot of regulations there. And so I've been working with some private developers because the state can't solve this all by itself. We all as a community have to work on this together.
And again, Renee is the CEO of Connecticut Housing Partners, which is a nonprofit that's been doing work, creating workforce affordable housing across the state for over 3 decades. And we love to get her perspective. A couple of stories that came across my news desk just this week, Renee, I'd love to get your take on it. First of all, the governor announcing CT Home Funds, a $30 million investment to incentivize and increase home ownership opportunities in Connecticut. What'd you think about this?
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing, but where is the housing stock?
Right.
Bankers that I'm talking to, when they're trying to work their community resource funds back into the community, they're very focused on first-time home ownership as well and having people go through those classes so that they're ready to buy. And this may sound political, but in a lot of ways, if they're giving somebody $50,000, to me, it just raises the price of the house by $50,000. So I think it contributes to inflation. But the housing stock, it's very limited. But with interest rates creeping down a little bit, we're seeing a little bit of movement. But basically, there's a lot of people in the state of Connecticut that have interest rates on their homes that are under 3%. And unless they're forced to sell through death or they have to move because of a job or a divorce, those are really the only occasions where housing is coming back online for other people to procure.
So, Renee, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what it sounds like to me, I like to call this checkmark legislation, where it looks like on paper or on the surface, I'm doing something to address this issue. But essentially, if we don't have the inventory, which we don't, we just don't have the inventory, and we haven't, especially since COVID, this is essentially not going to solve the problem. This isn't even cracking at solving the problem.
Right. And I had a conversation with a woman whose mother had died. And so she had to put the house on the market. And she must have gotten 15 bids on this house. And some of them were from this program where they had the down payment assistance. And she consciously did not entertain those offers because she didn't want to deal with the paperwork bureaucracy and the length of time it would take to close on the house.
Oh, wow. So it actually could be a deterrent for people who use. That's interesting. So that's like a double whammy. Wow. Wow.
Yes.
I mean, I get it, especially when you're getting dozens of offers, which right now it is still a seller's market. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Huh. I know. I was surprised, too.
Yeah. Wow. So we have Renee Dobas here, who is our housing expert on the show. I have one more question for you, Renee. Did you hear that Fairfield got approval for the moratorium, a 4-year moratorium? They do not have to technically engage in any 830G project proposals moving forward for the next 4 years?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I think 4 years is too long, and I've been talking to the legislators. I want them to reduce that moratorium to, you know, no more than 2 years. Because that's going to slow the development of housing that's affordable in that particular community. And so I've been working hard trying to convince them of it. The feedback I'm getting is that they really don't want to tinker with 830G. They just want to leave it as is and then put some other legislation that partners with it to try to help encourage the building of affordable housing. So we'll see. again, we have to see what the political will is in Hartford, but we're doing the best we can to be convincing.
I got to be honest, Renee, when I heard about Fairfield getting the moratorium, because I know other Fairfield County towns, specifically like a Westport, New Canaan being the other one, mm-hmm. they tried for this moratorium mm-hmm. as well. You know what this says to me is that 830G is not working. The fact that towns are fighting to prove that they do not want in with these projects, I don't think is necessarily saying that they don't believe in creating affordable or workforce housing. I think they don't want in to have to say, okay, I guess we're going to bypass our local zoning and we're just going to build these properties. When in fact, you hear testimony from people like Erica who are saying, yeah, Stamford, for example, all you hear about is complex mm-hmm. here, complex there. This is popping up. Here's all these opportunities, but they can't afford them. So why would That's towns correct. And cities want to engage with 830G when all you're doing is overdeveloping and you're not actually solving anything? Nothing's being solved.
That's correct.
You know, so when I hear that towns are now getting moratoriums, that to me screams that 830G is a bigger problem than we're making it out to be. Not you and me, but the state.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. And the other thing that's interesting about 830G is that when a developer goes in there to build, only 30% of their units need to be affordable.
That's
so
insane.
The ratio is upside down.
Yeah, totally. They're just getting rich. Down. They're getting rich, and Connecticut yes. residents are struggling. I don't understand. It's right. very clear. It's incredibly clear. Oh, Renee, this is yes. why I need you on more than once a month, but I appreciate that you give us the time every single month on WICC. If people want more information about Connecticut Housing Partners, where do they go?
CTHousingPartners.org, and please donate. We need all the help that we can get.
Yes.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Always. And Renee Dobas, we appreciate your time. Renee, who is the CEO of Connecticut Housing Partners right here on WICC.